This is special coverage from WBUR Boston. I'm Tom Ashbrook. What a week it's been. The Northern Alliance, backed by U.S. bombing and special forces, took control first of the northern Afghan city of Mazar-e Sharif, and then Kabul, the capital itself, and much more. On the home front, an American airliner's crash in a Queens neighborhood sent another wave of terror through an already jittery country. As quickly as these stories break, viewers around the world watch them unfold on their TV sets. But how true a story are we seeing, and how nationally influenced is the reporting we depend on? Tonight, we're taking a closer look at Al Jazeera, the 24-hour satellite news station that's based in Qatar and broadcasts in Arabic throughout the Arab world and to subscribers around the globe. Members of the Bush administration have criticized Al Jazeera for airing taped messages from Osama bin Laden and members of the Al-Qaeda terrorist network. This week, Al Jazeera's Kabul offices were destroyed by U.S. bombs, and one of the network's correspondents was briefly detained on his way to Crawford, Texas. I spoke earlier today with Al Jazeera Washington Bureau Chief Hafez Al-Mirazi, and I asked him whether he thought Al Jazeera had been targeted by the U.S. military.
Well, I am really not sure about what happened in Kabul, and I have to be a little bit skeptical and cynical about the timing of the bombing of our office over there, that we even heard from people, or journalists over there, Western journalists, including people from the BBC, that they really suspect the timing, that at the time of the Northern Alliance people are getting into Kabul, and the main concern in Washington is the backlash of the images that will come out to the world of massacres or potential massacres of POWs and civilians because of the Northern Alliance perceived intentions to settle accounts.
Of course,
Taliban people over there.
Of course, in the event that we don't have word of such widespread killings, and the U.S. denied that Al Jazeera's offices were targeted there, but they were hit by two 500-pound bombs, I believe, and they were pretty well destroyed?
Yes, it has been destroyed, and for the last 3 or 4 days, we have been in contact with the Pentagon and the Central Command. From the first day, they wanted a specific address of that office, where is it located exactly, and we gave them all the information. Yet we call them almost on daily basis to give us an update, including at some point the spokesman of the Defense Department was in our office in Washington for a live interview, and he promised that they will look into the matter, but we haven't heard anything from them yet.
Hafez El-Mirazi, on a broader plane, what do Middle Eastern viewers get on Al Jazeera that they would not see on American television?
What they would get in Al Jazeera that they wouldn't see not only on American television, but even in any other Arab media, is the other side of the story. In the most of the Arab media, where the government controlled the media, you wouldn't hear from the opposition or the other side. And most of the time, the opposition is labeled as terrorists, or rebels, or traitors. And these are enough to scare government-controlled media and not to try to interview them, even if they have a chance to do that. In the U.S. side, unfortunately, the media decided to take the government side and to accept the government version of the military operation. So if there is military casualties and we have footage of it, they would decide that this is exaggerated or kind of propaganda from Taliban. If there is a tape from bin Laden or Al-Qaeda organization that the U.S. is fighting, and this is a conflict with two parties, we are not in the state fighting ghosts, the U.S. media would decide no, because of security reasons, we are not going to put that. Al Jazeera is putting the other side of the story.
Hafez El-Mirazi, during the Gulf War, not so long ago, only a decade ago, CNN was really the only global TV window on the conflict. Now, in the Mideast, at least, Al Jazeera shares the stage. What do you think the impact has been on the region's understanding of this conflict, of having this other voice, this other view?
First of all, we are at a disadvantage in that comparison because CNN is an English-speaking network. Ours is only in Arabic. Mm-hmm. So CNN did a good service at that time and did cover it well. And people in the Middle East and in the Arab world managed to listen to the CNN directly without anyone in the middle. Al Jazeera did a marvelous job. Being in Arabic allow people really to pick and choose and selectively get what Al Jazeera said and tell their audience only one part of the story, that Al Jazeera is carrying Bin Laden and Taliban. They don't tell them that Al Jazeera is carrying also Rumsfeld, Rice, Bush, even Al Jazeera, when most of the U.S. networks, if not all of them except CNN, decided not to carry President Bush's speech in Atlanta, Georgia, about 10 days ago or a week ago. Al Jazeera was carrying President Bush live with simultaneous interpretation into Arabic.
How is Al Jazeera perceived in the Middle East politically? Who likes it and who doesn't?
Most of the governments do not like Al Jazeera because, and this is the case now we have seen with the U.S., the story of Al Jazeera was that people didn't like, because the government was very easy before Al Jazeera for most Middle Eastern governments to give only one side of the story. And you need to rely on BBC or Voice of America radios in order to listen to the rest of them. And then they would label BBC or Voice of America as Western-owned, Western-run. So their audience really would not really find a real Arab media or a media with Arab perspective to rely on. And that bothered them a lot. That caused us to lose access to many Arab capitals. They closed down many of our offices before. And until now, there are some Arab capitals in which Al Jazeera reporters cannot get into there.
Hafez El-Marazi, how do you think that the existence of Al Jazeera will help shape the ultimate outcome of this conflict we're in now?
It gives global and universal aspect of it. It is not an American story. We, as we hear usually in most of the U.S. media, we and them. In Al Jazeera, we don't use we. We don't carry American flag or Afghani flag. We consider ourselves in the middle. And that pushes a little bit the U.S. media in order to look at that side of the story. There is some kind of a pressure on them that how about these images and footage of civilian casualties? And that is important. Our correspondent and reporters told us after the broadcasting of the civilian casualties out of Kabul and Afghanistan, they found that very less casualties or civilian casualties. That means that people in the Pentagon realized that they should be more accurate in targeting. And this is good news for all of us. On the other side also, it pushes the margin of freedom in the Middle East and in the Arab world for democratization. Also, we interview Israeli officials, and that encourage the kind of a dialogue that people listen to the other point of view. Regardless of your grievances or anything, you got to get into the discussion. Listen to political Islamists and what happened before because of that violence, that many governments in the region radicalized the political Islam because they pushed them out of the open discussion. And once you send the people to the underground, they could do terrible things.
Hafez El-Marazi is Washington Bureau Chief for Al Jazeera. He spoke with us earlier today. This week, special coverage producers and tonight's guests have been monitoring American TV News and Al Jazeera to see how they're covering the war on terror. We're joined now by Sri Srinivasan, professor of journalism at Columbia University and a founder of the South Asian Journalists Association. Welcome, Sri Srinivasan.
Good evening.
Also with us is Samer Shihata, an assistant professor of politics at the Center for Contemporary Studies at Georgetown University. Hello, Samer Shihata.
Hello.
And with us from the studios of Vermont Public Radio, our own news analyst, Jack Beatty. Hi, Jack.
Hello, Tom.
We all know that it's a global village, but the images that we see in that village are not all the same. At one time, CNN was the only outfit spanning the globe or spanning regions. Now it's not alone. And in the Islamic world in particular, the Arabic-speaking world, we have a big splash by Al Jazeera, new since the Gulf War and very prominent in the coverage of the entire crisis that's unfolded since September 11th. I want to ask you, Sri Srinivasan and Samer Shihata, give us your general impressions. You've seen American television coverage of this crisis period. You've seen Algeria's coverage and heard the tone of it. Sri Srinivasan, you first, if you would. What's your general impression of the difference between what viewers of these two sources see?
Well, I think we need to step back and what you first said about this is not the Gulf War having been sort of a one-player scene where only CNN was available. Mm-hmm. This particular war, we have not just CNN, we've got the other cable networks in the United States and also the Internet and also these different points of view, including Arab television, Arabic television, and Al Jazeera in particular. This is just the most obvious and the most high profile of the other voices that are out there.
So the first thing is the very fact of the existence of a kind of global alternative.
Yeah, and several different alternatives, mm-hmm. not just Al Jazeera, but if for Americans, the fact that they can actually read the BBC or listen to the BBC on either through satellite television or on the Internet is also new. And this is all part of how things have changed since the Gulf War, and that's important to look at.
CNN looked like a new abundance before, but now there's even more abundance, and with that, more diversity and people finding different sources for their news.
Absolutely. And so therefore, you've got different points of view. And for the first time, I think the American audience is realizing that it isn't easy to just look at everything through one voice, which is what basically we had at the Gulf War. And now with this war, you've got these other choices. And also now the coverage of the coverage has also been really intriguing to watch how people have been reacting. One of the things that I've seen, and we'll get more into this, is that there is a perception that the American point of view that's coming through regularly in the discussion groups, for example, is that there is not much coverage of the dissent. There is not much coverage of civilian casualties. And we have seen memos being written by American editors to their staff saying, well, let's not highlight civilian casualties, things like that. On the other hand, if you look at anything that's not American, if you look at the British coverage, you look at, and getting closer and closer to the Middle East and Central and South Asia, you see even more coverage of things that you don't see here.
Samer Shahata, you've watched Al Jazeera in particular. If Americans were seeing that, how would they note it different from what they're seeing on the U.S. networks?
Yes, Tom. It's very good simply that we have more than one viewpoint. It's not only CNN. And I think that's especially crucial because the United States is the active player in the war. So that makes it even more important that we get different viewpoints, and not just the BBC in England, which is also participating, but things like Al Jazeera and the other Arabic press. There's no question in my mind, watching Al Jazeera in the last month or so, and even before that, that in terms of the bombing of Afghanistan, it has been better coverage overall. There's no question that it's more critical, that it's more thorough, devoting a lot of time and resources. As you know, they have people on the ground there, and they were up until the American bombardment of their offices in Kabul a couple of days ago, were getting footage out every day. And also in terms of the analysis that they have, I've really been impressed in terms of the different viewpoints, American, British, Western generally, as well as people from the Arab and Islamic world who have voiced their views on the war, its effectiveness, analysis of the Al-Qaeda network, as well as American foreign policy.
Samer Shahata, we're going to come back after a quick break and press you on what you mean by Arab viewers of Al Jazeera getting better coverage. But before we go to that break, Jack Beattie, what do you think? Here we are supposed to be the media nation, and our guests tonight are saying that it's possible that the Arab world is getting better coverage of this war on terrorism.
Yeah, it'd be interesting to hear what they mean by better, but it's certainly true that American coverage has been criticized as being too national in scope. On the other hand, it's been criticized by the right for not being national enough. In a very impolitic speech, an executive of ABC News said that he was agnostic on the question of whether or not the Pentagon should have been considered a war target. And he didn't want to commit himself on such a question. Well, that was an amazing statement, and people on the right seized on that, and they said that's what you have in the networks. These people, far from just being objective, they're almost anti-American. So while the left has said you're red, white, and blue, the right has said you're not biased enough. So the networks have been especially CNN has had a hard time pleasing everybody. I think
a lot of pressures on U.S. coverage. We're talking tonight about U.S. coverage of the war, Al Jazeera's coverage of the war, the satellite television network that's watched avidly by many, many people throughout the Islamic world. We're joined by folks who've been watching it intensely and especially for the last week and looking at the different views that emerge on those screens. We're not taking phone calls this hour, but you can join the conversation online. Go to WBUR.org and click on Special Coverage Forums. I'm Tom Ashbrook. You're listening to special coverage from WBUR Boston. This is special coverage from WBUR Boston. I'm Tom Ashbrook. We're talking this hour about television coverage of the war on terrorism, the war in particular in Afghanistan, but really globally, and how different audiences are getting different views of what's going on. I want to take a minute now to compare side by side the NBC Nightly News from this Tuesday when NBC was reporting on the fall of Kabul. We'll follow that by the same news event covered on the Arabic satellite television network Al Jazeera. First, NBC Nightly News with Tom Brokaw.
We'll begin tonight in Kabul with NBC's Tom Aspel, one of the first journalists to enter the capital earlier today. Tom?
Tom, tonight the Taliban is on the run all over Afghanistan, shattered by American airstrikes and battlefield defeats at the hands of the Northern Alliance. At dawn, Kabul was liberated. The conquering army, the Northern Alliance, rolled past craters made by U.S. bombs, abandoned trenches, tanks, and bodies of Taliban fighters. By noon, 5 years of harsh Taliban rule had come to an end. Jubilant crowds poured into the streets.
We thank God for delivering us from them. They sold us.
That was the top of the NBC Nightly News with Tom Brokaw, covering the fall of Kabul for audiences in the United States. Now we're going to step back and listen to coverage, how the same event was reported on the Arabic satellite television network Al Jazeera, Tuesday of this week.
Today, the Northern Alliance has captured Kabul without any resistance from the Taliban forces, as if they had planned to retreat from Kabul. No one expected the Northern Alliance to capture Kabul so quickly, partly because President Bush told them not to enter Kabul. The opposition forces took control of the presidential palace and other major public buildings in Kabul yesterday, including the state Bakhtar News Agency. Opposition forces were also reported to be providing security for foreign embassies in the capital. The Northern Alliance claimed the Taliban were no longer in control of what was their power base in the southern city of Kandahar after their overnight retreat from the capital, Kabul. The residents of Kabul were celebrating. Men were shaving their beards and playing music all over the city. Meanwhile, the soldiers of the Northern Alliance were arresting anybody they suspected to be a soldier for the Taliban. An Al Jazeera correspondent saw the soldiers of the Northern Alliance spitting on the dead bodies of the Taliban soldiers and kicking them in the head. Now Kabul is captured, the Taliban is no longer the strongest force in Afghanistan.
That was Tuesday's reporting on the fall of Kabul on the Arabic satellite television network Al Jazeera. We're comparing and contrasting tonight U.S. television coverage, Al Jazeera television coverage of the war on terror around the world and in Afghanistan in particular. We're joined by Sri Srinivasan, a professor of journalism at Columbia University and founder of the South Asian Journalists Association, and also by Samer Shehata, an assistant professor of politics at the Center for Contemporary Arab Studies at Georgetown University, also by our own news analyst, Jack Beatty. Samer Shehata, if I could, let me ask you just to comment on the two reports that we just heard. Same event, a little bit different tone and information. Do you think this is an example of how we get a different story? And what do you hear and see there?
Yes, I think that, you know, it's difficult to extrapolate or generalize from a 2 or 3 minute segment, but I think it does give a hint possibly as to kind of larger issues and so forth. We heard, for instance, in the Al Jazeera report, I think a less self-congratulatory, less kind of jubilant news coverage of the fall of Kabul. At the same time, though, you know, it has to be said that it certainly wasn't pro-Taliban by any means. Mm-hmm. And the transcripts we've all read of the 11-13 reports were quite actually pro-Northern Alliance in terms of how Al Jazeera reported it. But more importantly, in the Al Jazeera segment, we heard a possible explanation for why it was Kabul fell so quickly and so easily, as opposed to the Brokaw segment, which didn't hint at that at all. And then later on in the Al Jazeera program, we learned that through the Pakistani reporter who interviewed Osama bin Laden, you remember several weeks ago,
yes.
that Osama bin Laden told him, and then the reporter told the world only afterwards, that it was part of a Taliban strategy, supposedly, to exit the cities and so forth and to flee to the countryside and the mountains. Now, whether we believe it or not, it's important that we get that that information. And there's just one other thing that needs to be said in mm-hmm. the comparison of the Brokaw and the Al Jazeera segments. We heard and then we saw the shocking actions of the Northern Alliance people throwing stones at, jumping on top of the dead bodies of, I don't know, they were Taliban soldiers or Taliban supporters. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the thing that came to my mind immediately is, you know, who are these people? And they seem just as barbaric as the Taliban. So that wasn't emphasized. We didn't hear it at all in the Brokaw segment. To be fair, in the coverage, Brokaw did show a few segments of people, I think, throwing stones at the Taliban soldiers. But it was much more thoroughly covered in the Al Jazeera segment that evening.
Sri Srinivasan, let me put the same question to you. What did you hear there? And more broadly, how would you characterize the difference between the tone and information conveyed by U.S. networks and Al Jazeera?
Sure. One quick reaction to this is that there were similarities. You know, mm-hmm. Samir's pointed out the differences, but the similarities, you know, including words that conveyed the jubilation and the euphoria, I caught that as being there. Now, a broader point here is that one of the things we've learned about September 11th and the actions after that is that the American audience was not interested in foreign news, foreign affairs, and the American press was responsible for buying into that and therefore not getting in-depth into the stories before September 11th.
Mm-hmm.
Since then, there's been a lot of progress that has been made, a lot more attention, obviously, because of the war has been focused on it. But even with this particular thing, the fall of Kabul, if you look at coverage, not just at NBC, you look anywhere, you will see that they're not getting into as much depth because, you know, there are other stories going on. There is some hint of fatigue, war fatigue, September 11th fatigue.
Mm-hmm.
And the fact that the Northern Alliance is not a group of saints that are doing good work.
So you don't want to look too close.
You don't want to look too close because this is and they're doing this in sort of America's name in many ways. And many Americans who know and are familiar with that region are sort of afraid about what's going to happen next. You know, who have you gotten into bed with here in this particular story? And now that hasn't come out as clearly. When you talk to everyday consumers of the news and you talk to them, the American media has portrayed this as a battle of good versus evil, and that Northern Alliance is all good guys, all white hats, and that the Taliban is all black hats.
Well, in fairness, I have seen some critical reporting of the Northern Alliance as well, but we take the general point of emphasis.
Right,
Jack Beattie, I want to bring you in here. What do these differences, and we'll explore them in more depth tonight, but what do these differences matter, Jack? If one part of the world is getting one perspective of a conflict and another, in this particular case, what does it matter?
Well, I don't know. They don't seem wildly discrepant to me. I mean, both
not off of that report.
Not off of that report at all. But from what one reads, there are differences, and these emerge. For one thing, Al Jazeera has sources in that world. I mean, they quote the bin Laden interview. They quote from Mohammed Omar. So they actually – it isn't just the talking head of the reporter. But you know, I think it does matter that if we're getting a black and white picture here, and the Muslim world is getting one that's much more complicated. That is to say, it brings in the Northern Alliance's malefactions. It brings in other things. Then it's a very different picture. I don't see that though in the American media. I don't really see the black and white. I understand that that's the thrust of the rhetoric and the packaging. America at war and so on, but I do hear a lot of talk. In fact, at the Pentagon news conference, conference the other day. Half the questions were about human rights violations. So I think it's terribly difficult to generalize about media that is on, as CNN is and the others, 24 hours a day. If they have a down moment where someone lapses into a kind of unconscious nationalism, that's soon corrected. At least it's been my experience. It's soon corrected by someone coming out with a very complicated picture that could almost come from Al Jazeera.
We're going to keep digging in here. One thing I've been struck by watching Al Jazeera is simply the fact that, seen from an Arab perspective, covering much more of the Arab world and the Third World, the world is a much more brown place, a much more bearded place, a turbaned place. It's just not as white bread even as CNN, which is perhaps the most global of the U.S.-based networks. I want to invite into our conversation now Eric Deggans. He's television critic for the St. Petersburg Times. He has a story coming out next week about a critique he did comparing a 90-minute broadcast of Al Jazeera and CNN on October 31st. Eric Deggans, welcome. What did you find out?
Well, when I watched the two channels, obviously the war hadn't heated up to the point where it is now. What I found most striking was that both of these channels seem to be rooted in their own cultures.
Mm-hmm.
So we see CNN approaching its news reports from a very American perspective, and obviously Al Jazeera is approaching it from a very Arab-centered perspective. And I think that brings differences large and small in what they do. For example, when I was watching Al Jazeera, a lot of the reports centered on killings of Palestinians that were assumed to be sort of reprisal killings by the Israeli army for the assassination of that minister some weeks before. What I saw at about 3 o'clock, 3:30, 4 o'clock was some extensive coverage of those issues. And several officials, Palestinian officials and Israeli officials also, commenting on what had happened and its significance.
Now, so much more sympathy to the Palestinian perspective on that conflict?
Well, what I thought was interesting was there was more sympathy for people who were saying that these people were killed unjustly. And the Israeli army was referred to as an opposition,
an occupying
force, mm-hmm. which we would never use those terms on CNN or in the American media.
Can I just say something, Eric?
Sure, sure.
But, I mean, I think the world recognizes that, you know, Israel's occupied the West Bank and the Gaza Strip for over 30 years now. And I think, Tom, you've really hit on a very, very important point, which is although there's been significant, I think, difference in the coverage of this war, the thing that Al Jazeera is very famous for is the coverage of the Intifada, the Al-Aqsa Intifada, which started in September. And that's really kind of galvanized Arab opinion. It's made Arabs from Morocco to Iraq conscious on a daily basis of what's been going on in terms of the Palestinian-Israeli conflict. It's kind of made the Intifada live, as it were. It's the Intifada live. And this has really caused problems for Arab regimes, and it's also galvanized Arab opinion. So
It was the mark of sort of the imperial U.S. Position in the world that we had. We were the base for the only global network. It's a funny difference when other people
right.
have comparable reach. Sri Srinivasan?
Yes, and this was in fact the reason that they even started Al Jazeera in 1995. The Arabic world watching. The Arabic-speaking world watching CNN during the Gulf War felt that this was, you know, as reported from Washington and from a Washington point of view. And so there was a demand for a more global and a different point of view. But it wasn't just in the Arabic-speaking world also. In countries like India and Pakistan, where Arabic is not the language that's spoken, there was a need for another voice and to see other kinds of voices coming on the air. And that's how you saw the importance of the BBC cannot be underestimated in all of this. And the reports coming out today about the number of American visitors to, say, the BBC websites, or now that there's BBC America, where you can see the BBC News on American television. Those kinds of things have had an important effect as well, that you can now get different perspectives.
Eric Diggins, other impressions from your 90-minute side-by-side comparison?
Yeah, and real quickly, what I was going to say is that I got the sense that perhaps there was a greater valuation of Arab lives and the lives of people in that region than we see in the American media. One of the things that I've criticized American media for is that we for some reason tend to value Arab lives less when we talk about some of these incidents and wars and killings and bombings that happen far away from our shores. The other thing that I noticed, for example, on CNN there was a discussion about some of the action in Congress to allow law enforcement greater latitude in pursuing terrorists. Mm-hmm. And there was a discussion between Judy Woodruff and a national correspondent. There was no discussion of how people who are not necessarily citizens but living here in the United States might feel about these increased powers and what the impact might be on their lives. It was from a very establishment point of view and centered on what the increased reach might do to improve law enforcement's chances of tracking down who's responsible for some of the terrorist actions that we've had in the United States. And I found myself thinking if Al Jazeera had done the same story, they probably would have presented someone who could present that point of view and sort of say, we're concerned, someone from their version of the ACLU or something like that.
It all depends where you stand, doesn't it? Eric Diggins, thanks very much for joining us this evening.
Thank you.
Eric Diggins is television critic for the St. Petersburg Times. Samir Shahata, I want to go back to your assertion earlier on that Al Jazeera's coverage is better. What do you mean by that, and what are the proof points you'd bring to the table on that?
Yeah, well, I mean, some of the things that have been mentioned earlier, there's no question that, as one of the other people on the program said, I mean, they have people on the ground. They've had reporters there, and they've been one of the only stations, I think maybe the only station, that has had people in Afghanistan for some time. They've also...
And that's a fairly simple but important thing, which access and images that U.S. Networks have often not had.
Well, I mean, it means that those of us who watch Al Jazeera get to see some of the... shall I say, in quotation marks, collateral damage that the Pentagon speaks about, and that is the kind of the unfortunate Afghani civilians who have died as a result of the military airstrikes.
But it's not just collateral damage, isn't it? I mean, for a while, everyone was depending on Al Jazeera's images out of Kabul. They were the only ones there.
Well, that's completely correct. You know, so not only is it kind of a better coverage because just simply because they have people there, it's more thorough coverage. I mean, longer segments, and I do think that they have managed to have a range of different viewpoints and so forth. Just for example, on one of the days that we were asked, that Shri and I were asked to watch the Al Jazeera news segment, I noticed in about 35 minutes they had three different people, a gentleman named Tom Kinney, who is apparently their military analyst in the United States. He teaches at Johns Hopkins. Mm-hmm. They did an interview with a gentleman named Gerald Russell out of London, who's the spokesperson for the British Foreign Ministry, who I must say spoke in impeccable Arabic, and it's something that many people in our State Department can't do, and that was really impressive. You can imagine an Arab viewership watching this guy from London speaking in Arabic and talking about Britain's position.
Samir Shahata, hold it there. We've got to take another break. We'll be right back. Listeners, you can read summaries of Al Jazeera's coverage on our website. Go to WBUR.org and click on Special Coverage. And while we're not taking phone calls this hour, you can get into an online conversation about Al Jazeera with other listeners at WBUR.org. Click on Special Coverage Forums. I'm Tom Ashbrook. You're listening to Special Coverage from WBUR Boston.
الثامنة ونصف مساء بتوقيت غرينتش. السلام عليكم ورحمة الله، أهلا بكم في حصاد اليوم، وفيه نتناول استمرار الحملة العسكرية ضد أفغانستان التي دخلت شهرها الثاني وسط أنباء عن مقتل العشرات من المتطوعين.
This is special coverage from WBUR Boston. I'm Tom Ashbrook. We're looking tonight at U.S. television coverage of the war on terrorism and Arab world coverage of the war on terrorism, in particular from Al Jazeera, the satellite TV network based in Qatar. We're joined this evening by Sri Srinivasa at Columbia School of Journalism and also by Samer Shahata, an assistant professor of politics at the Center for Contemporary Arab Studies at Georgetown University, and our own Jack Beatty. Sri Srinivasa, I wanted to put to you the question. There was criticism by the U.S. government early on of Al Jazeera for its coverage of the war on terrorism, the aftermath of September 11th. How has Al Jazeera covered the United States, and what has been the source of this criticism from Washington?
Well, I think Washington was not expecting equal time for what they felt was the other side. And you saw that the early impulse of Washington was to try and almost censor Al Jazeera if it could. And in fairness to Al Jazeera, they have been covering extensively the American point of view. They regularly interrupt their programming for press conferences by President Bush or Secretary of Defense Rumsfeld, you know, Colin Powell. All of this they do on a regular basis. If you compare that to the way the American government sort of told or hinted to American executives that they shouldn't be running, say, the videotape of Osama bin Laden's speeches. I mean, we don't get to see that here in America, really, what he's saying. There's paraphrasing. There is you see shots of him, but
for
not
for a moment
video.
And then gone.
And what I would like to see, and I would like to see what he has to say, by censoring bin Laden, I don't know what you're achieving. One of the excuses was that somehow some kind of secret code words, you know, grandma's in the big chair, which is the code to go bomb the Americans. It was going to be heard by these terrorists. Well, the fact is, I think in a state of war, they're not waiting for CNN to broadcast their next round of attacks, if it is coming.
I guess there was never much credence to that, really. But you're saying that the Arab world is getting the U.S. message.
I think so. And I mean, all the comparisons of airtime, all the comparisons of the kind of voices that are going on the air, have shown that there is plenty of coverage of the American point of view.
Samer Shahata, is that your impression as well?
Yes, I think that's right. I mean, I think that since the conflict started, American, implicit policy towards Al Jazeera has changed quite significantly. Initially, there was overt hostility towards Al Jazeera. And then after they realized, I think, that that wasn't going to work and that basically it was a kind of censorship is what they were calling for, they moved to a different policy, which was a kind of let's try to be on Al Jazeera as much as we can. And, you know, Condoleezza Rice got on and I think Colin Powell got on. And then they let Christopher Ross, a former U.S. ambassador to Syria who speaks Arabic, come on after they showed an Osama bin Laden tape so that he could point by point rebut it. And he did a very good job in Arabic. Mm-hmm. But that's changed. And I think most recently, since a couple of days ago, the policy has shifted again. And that is, let's bomb Al Jazeera out of Kabul and out of Afghanistan. And I actually think it was deliberate. You know, they also hit the BBC studio, and I think it was deliberate.
You're talking in particular about bombs. I think there were two 500-pound bombs that fell on the building that housed Al Jazeera's offices in Kabul.
Absolutely outrageous.
Now, in fairness, should we point out that this wasn't an area, it was said, where the Taliban also had significant offices, but you see it as a deliberate strike against a news outlet?
I think, you know, that it wouldn't be out of question for it to be deliberate, for the simple reason that the U.S. right now doesn't want to have images around the world of the Northern Alliance people and their supporters doing shocking things.
But Al Jazeera, you know, then ended up running CNN footage out of Kabul.
Right. This morning I saw Christina Amanpour on Al Jazeera as part of their relationship that they've kind of brokered between the two stations.
It is interesting. We also see in the news that the Al Jazeera reporter who went to Texas to report on the Bush-Putin meeting was detained.
4 hours he was detained. Outrageous also.
Well, I guess. But, you know, this is small town Texas, and here's a guy from Al Jazeera, something. They don't know what it is. Maybe. Jack, is this a serious attack on Al Jazeera, or is this the kind of inevitable, downside of war mentality?
I just don't know. I mean, it does seem to me to be far-fetched to say it's deliberate. It reminds me a little bit of what the Chinese were saying about our striking of their embassy in Belgrade, that it was somehow deliberate. I can't imagine a worse public relations gesture than doing something like this intentionally. But things can happen in wartime. I'm interested in just a short answer to this question. The big failure in the American press in the past couple of weeks has been not preparing us for what just happened. All we've been reading about really is the strong morale among the Taliban, weak morale among the opposition, things going to last until next spring, a tough opposition. We were not at all prepared, at least I wasn't, as a consumer of the New York Times and the Washington Post, for what has just happened. My question is, did Al Jazeera do a better job about that, reporting on the weakness of the Taliban morale and on basically the weakness of their defenses?
That is a great question. Let me put it to Sri Srinivasan, you first, if I may. What about that?
Sure. I think, Jack, all of us were not prepared, and you know, if you read the news. And I don't think that Al Jazeera had much better information than anybody else. They have been pointing to various strategies, for example, that the in the various scenarios, and this was one of the scenarios, but it was not up front and center. And Samir may have a better.
Samir Shahata, if that's true, what are we to make of that? Here's the plugged-in network. Why shouldn't they have seen more clearly?
Right. No, I agree with Jack. I mean, I think it came as a shock to all of us, and I don't think that watching Al Jazeera prepared us that much more for what happened in Kabul. But at the same time, though, you know, we all knew that the Taliban had about 45,000 soldiers, supposedly. It's one of the poorest countries in the world. It makes Pakistan next door with a GNP of $500 look like, you know, a kind of first-world country. And
Yeah, we knew that, but we're talking here about quality of coverage tonight. And if Al Jazeera's there on the ground, wouldn't we expect a little better anticipation of
events? Well, Jack, just to be fair, I think this is something that is not that could have been predicted, that they decided, the Taliban insiders decided that to make a strategic retreat and sort of fight in a different place and you know, pick their battles.
And that's actually what they reported. You know, what Sri is saying is exactly what they reported on the segment that we heard.
Right.
Yeah. So
what I'm
less
saying is they wouldn't have known it in advance, Samir, unless they were part of the. And this maybe is a way to prove that Al Jazeera is not part of Al-Qaeda or the Taliban.
I don't think anybody's asserting that anymore. They're, they're well known in the Arab world for being controversial for their diversity of views, we read. There's much more to be said here, but our time is running down. And I hate to do it, but I've got to thank you and bid adieu. Sri Srinivasan, thanks very much for joining us.
Thank you.
Sri Srinivasan is a professor of journalism at Columbia University and founder of the South Asian Journalists Association. And Samir Shahata, thank you very much as well.
Thank you.
Samir Shahata is an assistant professor of politics at the Center for Contemporary Arab Studies at Georgetown University. For daily updates of Al Jazeera's coverage, go to our website at WBUR.org and click on Special Coverage. While there, you can continue this conversation by selecting Special Coverage Forums. Now, sounds from another event-packed week.
The house started shaking, vibrating, and then through my back, like my backyard just like exploded, and my window was like engulfed in flame, and I just got up. I was on my knees looking for my glasses, but I couldn't find them. When I saw the fire, I just ran, and then I ran outside. And
American Airlines Flight 587 left JFK this morning at 9:14. It crashed at 9:17. So far as we know from air traffic control, there were no unusual communications from the cockpit. There were 255 people on board on the manifest.
Our community is completely devastated. We could never dream that this would happen 2 months after the terrorist attack. This is the plane that takes Dominicans on a daily basis to visit the loved ones in the Dominican Republic.
Well, this is it. We're walking into Kabul City. We don't seem to have any problems around us. There's only people that are friendly and are saying, chanting, I'm afraid, kill the Taliban. But as we understand it, as we walk in here, there aren't going to be that many Taliban anyway.
Yesterday, I was able to report to the nation that one of those conditions has been met with the release and rescue of the humanitarian aid workers.
We got out of the prison and we walked through the city, and the people came out of the houses and they were talking to us and they greeted us, and they were all clapping, and they didn't know there were foreigners in the prison, so it was a big attraction. So everybody came out of the houses and in the city, and they were celebrating and waving us and hugging us, and it was like a big celebration.
And I think the president really enjoyed himself. I told him he was welcome to come back next August to get a true taste of Crawford. He said, fine, and maybe you'd like to go to Siberia in the winter.
Sounds from another week of events unfolding after September 11th. Jack Beatty, I guess if anyone wanted to know what it feels like to live through a time of history in the making, well, this is it.
That medley would really give it to you, wouldn't it? Huh? Mm. It's been a vertiginous week. I mean, beginning with the crash, and then, I mean, the different sort of emotional valences we've had, the sorrow and incredulity that this could be happening again in New York, disbelief, then the sort of comedy, the photo op comedy of and hopefulness, hopeful portent of the meeting with Putin, and over all of it, the victories seemingly for the Northern Alliance and others over the Taliban in Afghanistan. It's been just the surges of things going on. It's just been very difficult to get one's balance off news that seems to be specializing in surprises and shocks.
You know, Jack, though, in total, I felt a real upturn this week, and for some reasons that you wouldn't expect. I mean, first of all, the fact that it seems that it wasn't a terror attack that brought down that airplane. In a weird way, it turned a tragedy into a relief, a bullet dodged. And then the very next day, Mazar-e Sharif, and then Kabul, and then all over Afghanistan, the Taliban pulling out. I think a lot of people felt that there was reason to feel hope or optimism for the first time here in a long time. The stock market showed that, and I think a lot of people felt it just in their emotional life. There was a little parting of clouds, even though it feels like it may be very temporary.
It does feel temporary, but there's no doubt about it that this has been a good week for the allies in Afghanistan. We've just heard tonight that there are clouds, obviously, and really the largest one is the moral and humanitarian disaster that's building up there. Now that the bombs now that the Taliban has been dislodged, that's emerging, and there are 500,000 or more people without homes in Afghanistan. There are 150,000 people have come since October, running from the bombs, from the drought, from the famine, from the horror, to Pakistan. Many of them don't have places to stay there. They're living in tents. And this is a huge humanitarian catastrophe building there. And apparently the food is at hand, according to authorities. Food can be got to them. But the problem is that the political situation there is so unsettled, the anarchy. The tribal anarchy into which Afghanistan could be settling could well prevent the food from getting to its targets. Just like the Taliban, the Northern Alliance people have raided the food. They've destroyed convoys. Bad signs, really, because on the human side, this is what this is really about. Not about one man, but trying to save the international community at last paying attention to this desperate country.
That would really cut short the congratulatory feeling if we see people starting to die in big numbers. On the other hand, there's a possibility now. I mean, there are land routes opened up, and if the chaos doesn't take over, there's at least a chance of getting that food in.
Yeah, and ironically, one of the food United Nations persons was quoted as saying, these people were, their starvation was building even before September 11th. This was going to be a crisis. But now, strangely, more food and more attention is at hand because of the war. So the war has at once, dishoused people and put them on the road to starvation and death. At the same time, it may have brought more relief to them, if it can ever get to them.
Meanwhile, the hunt for Osama bin Laden comes on. Donald Rumsfeld says today, until you catch the chicken, you don't have the chicken. There's a thought for the weekend, Jack.
Indeed.
Have a good one.
and you too.
Listeners, thanks for joining us. I'm Tom Ashbrook. You're listening to special coverage from WBUR in Boston.